Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
Hello, this is how we greet you. This is what we say every day when we meet you.
From KQED in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. It seems like actor Randall Park has been in everything. Veep, WandaVision, he played an amiable version of the North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un in The Interview. He starred in Netflix's Always Be My Maybe with Ali Wong. Park's breakthrough role came when he booked the hit ABC series Fresh Off the Boat when he was 40, and after many years living with his parents and hustling for small parts anywhere he could find them. We'll talk to Randall Park about finding success, his wide-ranging roles, and his directorial debut right after this news.
In a coffee shop, I'll make a body drop with my signature karate chop. And lollygagging politicians get the lollipop. In competition, get the nuts and the poppycock. Iconoclastic raps we blast at kids, yet keeping it classic like Krylon and Pop and Lock. And crooked cops get the barrel. Impeccable aim, we put an arrow through a sparrow.
After years playing roles and bit parts, Randall Park knows how to steal a scene. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Park has played a scientist, a slacker, a dictator. His one scene in The Office, pretending to be Jim Halpert to mess with Dwight Schrute, is a viral hit.
Morning, Dwight. Who are you?
Who am I? I'm Jim. We've been working together for 12 years. Weird joke, Dwight.
You're not Jim. Jim's not Asian.
You seriously never noticed? Hey, hats off to you for not seeing race.
Park hasn't just made it in acting. He's made his way in acting, creating the roles he wasn't being offered, like the romantic lead in a rom-com by teaming up with Ali Wong to make Always Be My Maybe. And he's directed his first film, Shortcomings, which just premiered at Sundance. Randall Park, it's so great to have you on Forum.
Oh my gosh, it's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
When I say you built your career from scratch, I mean, your dad owned a one-hour photo place. Your mom did accounting for the UCLA student store. Yeah. Our producer, Grace, wants you to do a show about Nepo babies. And we were like, wow, he is not a Nepo baby.
I don't think you can be an Asian American in this industry and be a Nepo baby.
Right. So what drew you to acting?
You know, it was college. It was my experience in college. I never thought that I had that in me, before UCLA. I was a very shy kid. I was, you know, stereotypically very good at math and sciences. And, I just didn't, you know, even consider it a remote possibility until I got to UCLA, and I got some encouragement from a teacher in the English department, because she had seen some of these papers that I had written, and she encouraged me to think about pursuing writing as a career option, because at the time I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I thought, oh my gosh, encouragement, I'll take it, you know, any kind of encouragement, I needed it at the time, and that kind of made me see myself as a writer, and so I decided to major in English, and they had a creative writing specialization, so I kind of geared my life towards that, and that kind of set me off on this creative journey.
And then to comedy too, like to start in creative writing. Did you see comedy? How did you see comedy, actually, is a better way of phrasing it, as a natural fit or as a fit?
It wasn't really a decision. It kind of just was something I gravitated towards. And I think it was because as a kid, I was obsessed with comedy. And I grew up watching sitcoms. You know, anytime stand-up comedy was on TV, I would watch. And usually that would be the late night shows and it would be way past my bedtime, but I'd be up sitting in front of the TV, just waiting for the comedian to come on, Johnny Carson and later Jay Leno and all the late night shows. I was obsessed with David Letterman and, when Conan came out, obsessed, you know, I was just like such a fan of comedy. And so once I started, this journey into creative writing, it just kind of felt natural for me. I just, you know, I just loved it. And anything else felt too corny and maudlin I was just so naturally interested in comedy.
Yeah. We were laughing earlier about how to be an Asian American actor. Now you probably couldn't be a Nepo baby, but, it meant you would audition for so many roles and try to do whatever you could to try to get yourself out there and pay the bills and so on. And I laughed so hard when I heard the story of how you actually didn't remember that you played Asian Jim in The Office, right? Like you'd forgotten that you had had that cold open.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that I had, yeah, I guess it, you know, I remembered having been on The Office only because it was like my favorite show. And just to have done a, you know, a quick guest spot on it was just so, you know, such a highlight for me. But then it was just the cold open, you know, on an episode in its waning years, you know. And I had great fun and it was just surreal being on that set. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that I thought anyone would think about again afterwards. And then several years later, I'm walking down the street and someone yells out, "Asian Jim." And I just didn't know remember the context of Asian Jim. And I thought it was like some racial thing, you know, so I was like very upset, you know, And then I go on my computer and find out that this thing has gone viral, you know, and this one scene in this cold open, you know, I was there for like 2 hours total, you know, just went in, shot the scene and left. It had become this a viral thing, which was really cool.
We're talking with actor Randall Park, and you, our listeners, are invited to join the conversation. You can tell us what roles of Randall Park's really stand out to you, are really memorable for you, or ones that you related to. Or, of course, you can ask him any questions about his work. You can email forum@kqed.org. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram @KQED Forum. You can give us a call at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. We all know the story of how hard it is to make it and how auditioning for parts constantly and getting rejected really does come with the territory. But there was this podcast that you did for Meditative Story where I think that struggle really hit. Yeah, it's actually a sweet story about how you met your wife, but it was also a real low point for you as well. And I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about what you were going through at that time.
Gosh, I don't remember the story I told for that.
There was definitely a moment when you, I think, were a filing clerk for like a company that would send residual checks.
Right.
Yeah, to actors and stuff.
When I was, the first half of my career, I was pretty much broke. And I needed side jobs like many actors do. I'd say the majority of actors do. And I had various jobs. I had so many jobs. Oh my God. I did everything. And one of the jobs I did for a stretch was I was a filing clerk at an accounting office that basically did the accounting for TV and film projects. So my job was to essentially like take all these check stubs and file them into these big filing cabinets, this room, this maze of filing cabinets. And you know, when you have this stack and you're just going from one drawer to another, you can't help but look at what you're about to file. And I would see basically these checks that they would pay these actors, you know, and producers. And I would, you know, think of the checks that I was getting at the time as compared to a lot of these checks that I was filing and just, you know, seeing the hierarchy of the business and also, you know, how much some of these big stars would make. And I think I could talk about this. I don't think Brad Pitt will be mad, but I remember, them saying, like, we're trying to get this check, this $500 check, like an old residual to Brad Pitt, but like, they're not even responding. And I just remember like being like, oh my God, he's not even responding to $500. Like, how can you, like, I'll take it, you know? I just marveled at the fact that they could just be not, you know, too busy, or, and not even like $500 was so nothing to him and to, you know, them or his team or whatever, that they weren't even returning these calls for them to get this check. And I just thought, wow, you know, that's wild.
Oh my God, that's crazy that while you're struggling, you're working at a place where you're getting to see what other actors make. That feels really painful.
It was very disheartening. It was very disheartening and probably a good source of a lot of sadness at the time for me.
Well, you do say in that podcast something really poignant about the fact that that time made you realize that you'd been a bad impression of yourself and spent too much time like that, that you would lose the plot, and that you started to audition as the Randall that should show up. And I'm wondering if, I mean, I know you said you have a hard time remembering all these things because you've done.
I don't remember. I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
But no, I'm imagining, yeah.
I have a vague idea.
But I imagine there was this moment when you were like, all right, I just got to turn this around. Like, I've got to tell myself or find out for sure if this is the right thing to be doing.
Yeah, I think a big revelation for me during that time, it wasn't so much of like, you know, oh, I gotta change my, you know, how I audition or change. I mean, although there was that, you know, but it really was about changing just my attitude about why I'm doing this and really coming to terms with the possibility or really the reality that this, you know, this filing job could be what I'm doing the rest of my life, you know, and I need to be okay with that as long as I get to keep acting, you know, as long as I get to keep writing and doing plays with, you know, the theater group that I was in and doing stand up and improv and all the stuff that I was doing that was so fun. Like, okay, this might be what my life looks like from here on out. And am I going to be okay with that? Because wow, I am doing what I love and yeah, I'm working this job just to, you know, to give me the ability to do those things. So
more
so
with Randall Park right after the break. Yeah.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking this hour with Randall Park, actor, director. You've probably seen him in so many things. WandaVision, Veep, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Fresh Off the Boat, Always Be My Maybe. His directorial debut is the movie Shortcomings, which premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. He'll also be in a new movie called Strays. And we want to hear your questions for Randall Park. You can email forum at kqed.org. You can post them on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at KQED Forum. You can call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. This listener tweets, please thank him for representing immigrant families with first-generation kids on Fresh Off the Boat. It was relatable to my Nigerian household. Was there any hesitation about the role or doing a TV series, i.e. commitment, given his broad film and guest starring experience? Did you have any hesitation about doing Fresh Off the Boat, where you play this dad, Louis Hoang, an immigrant dad in the sitcom?
There was no hesitation in regards to the prospect of having a regular job, you know, in this business. You know, that was very exciting for me. And to be on a show, you know, that was always the dream, just to be on a show. But the hesitation for me came in, you know, actually playing this character and playing a Taiwanese Chinese father, you know. Being a Korean American actor, that's where the hesitation was, and it was definitely a source of anxiety, and I didn't know if I was the one to do that, you know, but I got a lot of encouragement from people on the show and also Eddie Hoang. You know, I was playing his dad, so it was very important to me that he's, you know, he be, good with me playing that part. And he was just very encouraging and very supportive. That was enough for me to be like, you know what, I'll do this. And it's an important show. And if I could play any part in getting this thing, out into the world, then I'll do it.
Why did you hesitate to portray a Taiwanese dad as a Korean American?
Well, I think because the character, you know, the question for me was, well, you know, 'cause I'm okay with playing other ethnicities of Asian, if the ethnicity isn't like intrinsically rooted in what the character represents, you know. Yeah. But I felt like, well, this character, I felt like at the time when I was, you know, having doubts, I felt like, well, I think his Taiwanese story is essential to his, to who he is, you know. But I think I kind of evolved in that thinking, you know. Really, he's defined by him being a loving father and husband, and those are the things that are really the most important aspects about this character and what he means to this show and the dynamics with the other characters, and that was something I could identify with, you know, because that was something that was in my life. I had a young daughter and my wife and they mean everything to me. And I felt like, oh, I could bring that to this character, even though there are other things about the character that may not be completely identical to what I'm going through. The heart of what Louis represents is there for me.
Well, this listener writes, what's your advice when things are not working out? How do you stay optimistic that you can make it in a career as tough as this one? What kept you going when you were holding down so many jobs?
Really, you know, what kept me going was making stuff. That really was big for me. Collaborating with friends who were in similar boats, and just staying creative and staying active, you know, and acting, constantly finding ways to act, because I loved to act and I loved to do comedy. So I was doing that constantly. I wasn't getting paid for it, but I was doing it. And I felt like in the process, I was getting better. I was getting more confident. I was meeting people, you know, a lot of people who I collaborate with to this day. I was planting seeds that really I wasn't aware I was doing at the time. For me, it was just like, oh, I just got to keep these muscles moving, you know?
Yeah, you always wanted to be the lead in a rom-com, and you didn't get to be the lead in a rom-com. And what I think is so cool is that you said, okay, if this is not a role that's being offered to me, then I'm going to write myself into one with Ali Wong and Always Be My Maybe, which is a huge favorite, especially here in the Bay Area. It was set in the Bay Area. Can you talk a little bit about that? About, well, first, I had no idea how much you loved rom-coms. I saw you do this like top five, and like your top two favorite movies were like Boomerang and When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah. I love a good love story. You know, I've always gravitated towards stories about real people in real places, you know, and rom-coms are always that, you know, not always, but mostly that. And I felt, I don't know, I just always wanted to be in one, you know. It was a dream, and it was something I never saw growing up, an Asian person in a rom-com, you know, as the lead in a rom-com. And it was like, why, you know, we fall in love. We have our own romantic stories. And so, yeah, it just was something that I always wanted to do. My friend Ali, who, you know, also came from the theater company that I had started at UCLA back in the day, loves those movies too. And we were just like, let's write one.
And then to play a lead character who also gets to take out Keanu Reeves.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, right.
The dream. that whole project was really like, there was so much wish fulfillment going on throughout that movie. And it was really, and one of the great wish fulfillments, you know, I had always throughout my career always wanted to like work with my friends on a project. And that was so fulfilling to be able to work with Ali and to be able to work with Ninochka Khan. You know, these are people who are such geniuses and just incredible at what they do, but then they're also my friends and people who I just love hanging out with. So it was really so great in that way.
And I love that you and Ali really wanted to do something different with this. Mm-hmm. Show Asian Americans in ways they weren't being shown in rom-coms, like sexy and struggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, these were things that we identified with, you know. We're sexy, you know.
Yeah.
We've known struggle. We've known we know stardom, which is what Ali's character kind of experiences. We know we know all that. So we kind of threw everything into that movie, you know, because we just, you know, it was an opportunity to tell our story. So we told a lot of it in that one.
Well, so this listener, Sarah, tweets, just tell him I love him. 2 exclamation marks.
Oh, that's so nice. Thanks, Sarah.
We're talking with Randall Park, and you can too by calling 866-733-6786, tweeting your comments or emailing them to forum@kqed.org. The roles that Randall Park's had that stand out for you, the questions that you have for Randall Park about his role. Maybe you have wanted to act but were afraid to try, or are an aspiring actor and relate to Randall Park's stories. The film you just did, Shortcomings, also tries to show Asian Americans just existing, like millennials existing as selfish or confused or whatever. Why was that something you were so drawn to and was so important to you to portray?
Again, it's something that I love in film, you know, and I've always loved in film stories about people, like real people, just kind of living their lives and trying their best. And these, I just love like movies by like directors like Noah Baumbach and Alexander Payne and Nicole Holofcener, you know, just these kind of simple stories about human beings. And we're at a time of really great progress in terms of representation for Asian Americans. And I think it's a very exciting time. And I'm just so thrilled and proud to be a part of this time.
Poopy.
Yeah. Mean, like not like, you know, mean and angry and basically complex, you know, we don't get the opportunity to be, just trying our best, you know, and failing, you know, and it, to me, it's just so real. And I felt like Adrian Tomina's graphic novel that I fell in love with when it came out in 2007, it embodied all those things that I love about movies, you know, but we never got to see ourselves in that way. And so it's a trip that I directed the movie version of that graphic novel.
Well, I loved that New Yorker profile that Washu just did of you. And there's something that you tell him in it that I really, really wanted to ask you about. So Shu asks you if you feel like this more sort of nuanced depiction in film like Shortcomings and even Everything Everywhere, that they were possible because of the success of Crazy Rich Asians. And you say, yes, it makes it easier to get this made, but it makes it harder to get it made right. And I'm so curious what you meant by that.
Gosh, that's pretty deep. I'm surprised I said that.
It's your words.
What I meant by it was that Crazy Rich Asians was such a huge success and a monumental time for Asian Americans, and it was so broadly popular and celebrated by so many people in the community, outside the community, you know, internationally, that as this industry tends to do, it's like, well, that was successful, let's make another just like that, you know. And I think because of the success of that, the industry's response to that is very specific in terms of what they want from Asian Americans, you know. And I think a movie like Shortcomings is kind of, in a lot of ways, the opposite of Crazy Rich Asians. It's not a romantic comedy by any means. You know, I mean, it does play with the format a little bit, but it's really about these very complicated people just trying to be better. You know. And that's not something that the types of stories that we've gotten to tell. And it's definitely not the kind of story that the industry has felt the need to subsidize, you know. It's just a tougher thing to to get right, I guess, because there's so many voices, you know, and it's such a collaborative medium that I think people take their cues from what worked, you know, and it's like, no, well, this is different.
Well, I think also you make this point that even when you do try to tell a different story than those stories, like Crazy Rich Asians, for example, that they still do have these, what you called traditional markers, like themes of family, the immigrant experience, something overseas happening, some kind of elder plays some kind of a role in this.
That's right. That's right.
And I really related to that because those markers are not really part of my experience, or if they are, they're like not a big part of it, right? But
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I felt like I somehow had to make them more than they are now.
Right, right. Well, I mean, they are, and I think they're important stories to tell, and I think they're authentic stories because, yeah, we have grandparents, we have an immigrant journey somewhere in our lineage, you know, we have great food, you know, we make dumplings from time to time. So like when you see that on screen, oh, that's cool, you know. But, you know, I feel like this industry, they want, and this goes for every kind of traditionally underrepresented group. It's like they kind of want you for the stories that only you can tell that we can't tell, you know, like what, like, we meaning like the mainstream white kind of experience. It's like, well, we don't know the immigrant journey, you know, so we don't have that in our experience. So for the most part, I'm totally generalizing. So we want to get it from you because you have that, it's immediate for you. You know, we don't have intergenerational conflict that you guys know in the way that you guys know. So you can tell that story. But when it comes to walking and talking on the street and hanging out in diners and trying to like figure out your life and making mistakes and dating and you know, well, we got that covered. We don't need that from you. You know, we want your martial arts because that's what you can do that we can't do, you know, but we got the other stuff covered. And I feel like, that thinking goes along for every group, you know. So in that sense, it's really hard to make a movie without those markers, you know, that distinguish us in the eyes of the industry from the stories that they can tell and that they've been telling for a long time.
I think that is such an interesting and important point. Yeah. We're talking with Randall Park, and he's an actor and director. He's just on a film called Shortcomings that you should check out that lets Asian Americans just tell a story that isn't connected to dumplings. And we'll have more with him after the break. Stay with us. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Best believe I punched Keanu Reeves and it was better than any scene you could see in Speed. I hit John Wick and now I'm feeling so appealing. Basically, I'm a god, you could call me Hercules. Best believe I punched Keanu Reeves and it was better than any scene
you could see in speed. I'm telling you for real, I punch Neo. He could duck bullets, but he couldn't duck.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking with Randall Park, who co-wrote, produced, and starred in the Netflix movie Always Be My Maybe, where that song came from. I punch Keanu Reeves. And he's also been in so many other things that you probably recognize. But he's got a new movie, Shortcomings, which premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, his directorial debut, which we were just talking about before the break, and we could talk about what you want to talk about, listeners. 866-733-6786, the number, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at KQED Forum, email forum at kqed.org. Ingrid tweets, Randall Park and Ali Wong were so funny and utterly charming and Always Be My Maybe sequel? Question mark.
I don't know, maybe. You know, if the stars align and the creative stars align and we come up with an idea, who knows? But for now we're basking still in our experience with Always Be My Maybe.
Nice. Let me go next to Aisha in Oakland. Hi, Aisha, you're on.
Hi, this is Aisha in Berkeley. And I'm so excited. Okay, I'm so excited. Randy, uh-huh. This is Aisha from Peace Quest. Remember from Peace
Quest? Oh, my God. Yes. Oh, my God. Oh my God.
I'm so proud of you. I am your biggest fan. I'm over here.
Oh, it's so good to hear from you.
Whenever I hear you, I see you on the TV or whatever, I'm always going, oh, my God, that's Randy. Everybody be quiet. That's Randy. Gotta watch him. And my husband,
she's an old friend because she called me Randy. That's how you know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, this Randall Park thing, what's that? I'm like, it's Randy. And then, of course, I know Mina because, you know, Nadia is my
oh
best
my
buddy.
Oh, my God. Hi, Aisha.
Hi. Anyway, so I walk in the door and I hear Randy on the radio and I'm like, I'm calling and I'm going to get through this.
Oh, my God, Aisha.
Right. But what's funny, can I just say the one thing about you, Randy? You're so delicately perfect in all of your work that I've seen. Just like you were in Peace Quest, you had this flair of like this something that was just kind of like a remarkable familiarity, like where people just feel comfortable with you right away.
Yes.
And so when we did our little skits together, like, I'm like, oh, cool, I'm with Randy because, like, it's going to be easy. Like, we're just going to be playing off of each other. It'll be easy improv,
right.
You know? The most important thing I want to say about Always Be My Maybe specifically is that you made whatever you guys did and all the energy between you and Ali Wong and everything, you made someone who's like a man. I'm not saying that men don't like that movie, but my husband fell in love with that movie. Is what I'm saying. Whatever you guys did with that movie, he wants to watch it over and over and over and over again.
Wow.
and he loves you. He's like, he feels like he knows you, but I'm only through like what I talked to him about. But he's like, no, this guy's dope. Like, this guy's dope.
Oh my gosh. Thanks, Aisha. That's so nice to hear.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Aisha, say hey to Tiku and Zoe, who, when she called in, we still talk about it.
Oh, good. She has a little, like, little recording bite of it, and she's like, I was on the radio. Yay. Love you guys. So keep up the great work.
So nice to hear from you, Aisha.
Yeah, so great to hear from you.
Take care, Randy. Keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, wow. Okay. That was crazy.
Bye, Aisha. Oh, my God. That was awesome. I had no idea we had that connection, Randy. All right, let me go to caller Jay next in Sacramento. Hi, Jay. You're on.
Hey there. I just wanted to say, you know, as a Chinese American, that I love your films because you're portraying what's, I guess, as a tertiary being Asian, but not as a primary. And that's sort of your big appeal to me. You're just telling stories. You're being who you are. And beyond that, you know, the Korean American part or the Asian American part isn't necessarily the primary thing that you portray in films. And I think that's super cool.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. Sarah writes, as the internet's resident, oh, hey, that guy. What's your favorite and least favorite role to get recognized for? Ooh, least favorite role to get recognized for. That's an interesting question, Sarah. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, that is. I mean, favorite. It's really hard for me to answer because I don't know. I feel like everything I've done, I mean, to me, my favorite is just when if I get recognized, say out in the street, if the people are nice, and people are always nice, and regardless of what they recognize me for. And I think it might be because, you know, I don't know. I think all the characters, you know, they that I've played have had something relatable about them. And so it's hard for me to say, like, what's my favorite or even my least favorite. I can't answer that. I'm so sorry. They're all my favorite because, you know, they've inspired people to be nice. And also I got paid for each of those. So, you know, like when you know, you get paid, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I know that that is a part of the process of trying to do as many roles as you possibly can to be able to make it and to pay your bills. But I'm also curious what you think you got from that experience that's unique. The fact that you do have so many credits, you've been able to play so many wide-ranging roles, you step in for a really short thing, it's got to also be an asset.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it makes sense only because I came from a background where, you know, in this theater company at UCLA, you know, as an Asian American theater company, we wrote all of our own material. After I graduated from UCLA, started another theater company with a lot of the members from that college theater group, and again, we were writing a lot of our own original work. And because of that, I got to play everything, you know, I got to play so many things. And I think when I started in this industry, it was like, you know, it was really kind of depressing for me because I didn't get the opportunity to play all those different things. And I was so used to that, you know, and but as my career progressed, I kind of found myself playing a bunch of different kinds of characters. And that was, you know, it kind of brought me back to my roots, which is what I've been able to do. Yeah, so it's just a great blessing and something that I feel very lucky about.
Well, the listener writes, is there a role that Randall Park wanted that got away that he still thinks about? And they also want to know how you get over rejection.
There is no role that I wanted that I still think about, cause I'm trying to even remember something that I can't really, I do remember auditioning for Harold and Kumar early on and being called back, a bunch of times and meeting with the director and, you know, and I was like, oh my gosh, I think I got this because this is my like fifth time here auditioning for them, you know, but I mean, come on, John Cho was John Cho's role, you know, he was iconic in that. And I think it was written for him, you know, and they were just probably auditioning folks to see if there was a backup in case he couldn't do it or, you know. So I don't think back at that and think, oh, man, I should have gotten it. But it was a bummer at the time, you know, because I had gone in so often. And I think throughout my career, there were a lot of bummers in that way where it was just like, oh, it would have been so great to play that role. And I think, you know, dealing with rejection, going to that question, I think it just goes back to what I said before, just like find opportunities to keep acting, you know, they don't have to be on TV or film or, you know, just do plays, do, you know, do just make stuff, make videos. I don't know. For me, that was like so therapeutic and so so fun and truly did plant the seeds for a lot of things that would blossom later on in my career.
Well, Judith writes, the 2014 film The Interview gave me my first experience of Mr. Park. He was brilliant, playing both the charismatic and dark sides of Kim Jong-un. Mr. Park's energy is so uplifting and genuine. I'm always happy to see him in anything he does.
Oh, that's really nice.
Is there a dramatic role or is there a role that you really want to play that you haven't gotten to play yet? Something
I definitely want to do more drama and you know, when I was in that theater group in college and after college, I got to play everything. I got to play villains. I got to play really dark characters. And I do, you know, I would love to do some of that. You know?
The way you did, I think it was Danny Chung in Veep, who's like sort of, he's kind of a villain, right? He's schmoozy, but he's also super cutthroat.
He's very, that was really fun. And also, come on, Veep. I mean, what an incredible show. And but to be able to play a character that, was a smarmy character was great fun.
And to do that in a guest role like that and to really make it shine, it was really great. It was one of the roles that also made me really take notice, Randall. Adriana tweets, how did Randall end up as best friends with The Rock? Is he learning any wrestling moves? Are you?
Rock and I are, you know. Well, I'm on the show Young Rock, and I play, and we play. I mean, we're very close, and you know that. I gotta tell you, that dude's amazing. He's the sweetest guy, and. These past three seasons, I've gotten to, you know, we kind of shoot all our stuff for the season at once, The Rock and I, for every episode. We shoot them all kind of in a week or 2 week span. And so I get to spend for the past 3 years, I've gotten to spend 2 weeks with him every year. And it's been great fun. I love that guy.
We are talking with Randall Park, and you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Scott writes, the Asian perm episode of Fresh Off the Boat directly connected with me because I have a full Chinese uncle who had curly hair and never talked about it. As for an actual question, what does your now grown daughter feel about her role as baby mentalist in your video skits? Okay, you got to talk about what baby mentalist is.
Baby mentalist is a... There was a period when I was making a lot of web series for this thing called Channel 101, which was a kind of a monthly a web series competition where if the audience votes, like you submit a pilot, and if the audience votes for your show, then you get to make the next episode, and you get to keep doing that until your show gets canceled or you end it. Shortly after we had our daughter, shortly after she was born, I was at home and I wanted I was itching to make something, and I decided, I'll make a detective show, which is another genre I love, but I'll have Ruby, my daughter, play the lead detective, she was just a baby at the time. So it was kind of absurd, but that show kept going. It kept getting voted on to the next episode. It was number one, like every month. So we just kept making more until we decided to end it shortly after she started walking. Cause then, you know, she could move and,
control her as well.
Yeah. So
that's so funny.
Yeah. So, I forgot the question, but that's
They were asking about, how your daughter feels about it now.
She just doesn't care. She doesn't care.
It is really funny. Baby Mentalist is really funny. Russ wants to know, has the popularity of Korean dramas influenced in any way the available roles for Asian actors in the U.S.? It's an interesting question because we were just talking earlier about, you know, kind of what's popular and how that can influence what people expect to see from Asian actors. And I have no idea if that's connected to this at all, but I am curious if it has had any effect and if it's positive or negative or, you know.
I don't know. I feel like I'm sure it has some effect just because they are so popular and so loved everywhere, including here in the U.S. And I love them. I get obsessed with them. And so my guess is that they, you know, people are taking note. But as to whether they're providing more opportunity, I really don't know. I do think that they are kind of increasing the general consciousness that, you know, people who look like us have these great stories, you know, to tell. And that's always a good thing.
Well, the listener writes, I'm a huge fan of Randall Park and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think he should do a spinoff with Owen Wilson. It would be awesome.
Oh, I love Owen Wilson. That would be so cool.
I want to ask you about how the experience was of directing for you. I mentioned earlier that WashU piece, and one of the things that really came out was that it sounds like it really made you feel pretty vulnerable, and it was an incredible amount of work.
Yes.
And so, yeah, so talk about what it was like to be behind the camera for a film.
It was amazing. Such a great experience. It felt in a strange way, in a way I felt very comfortable doing it. You know, I felt like, oh, I was using a lot of my skill set directing in terms of everything that I've learned and picked up in my throughout my career, just using all of those parts of me. So it was very fulfilling in that way, but also, yes, very challenging. And especially when you're so close to something and you feel so connected to a story and you have a vision. You know, your job as a director is to have a vision and to make sure that vision gets conveyed. But you know, it's also a collaborative medium, and you're working with people, and everyone has their own ideas, and you want to try to take the best ideas that support your vision, and that could be tricky, you know, because there are times when, especially someone like me who's just like so eager to please, where it's like, oh, I got to stick to my guns here. I got to stick to my guns, and that can lead to conflict. But that's like the beauty of filmmaking, you know. It's like it's truly, especially independent film, it's something you have to fight for, you know, in every way. And that's exciting, but it's also you know, very challenging. But I would do it again because I just loved it so much.
Well, Randall Park, thank you so much for all the moments that you have given us. Congratulations on Shortcomings, and thanks for never giving up.
Oh my gosh, thank you, Mina. That went by so quick.
So fast.
Enjoy talking.
Thank you for being on. Randall Park, check him out. Check out Shortcomings, check out Strays and all of his other work. There is so much to enjoy. Forum is produced by Gray Swan, Caroline Smith, Marlena Jackson Redondo. Susie Britton is lead producer. Susan Davis is our senior producer. Engineers are Danny Bringer, Brendan Willard, and Jim Bennett. Our interns are Lulu Ralda and Jericho Reininger. Vice President of News is Ethan Tobin Lindsay. Our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Every dog will have his day, and I'ma have mine. Buy a box of rosé, and I'ma have wine. We ordered too many tennis balls, but it'll be fine, because we got a new song to remind you that we bounce back like a tennis ball. Bounce back like a basketball. Bounce back like a soccer ball, or really any kind of ball. Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.